This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
4.5 hours until puck drop between the Jets and the Senators at Bell MTS Place. We're pleased to welcome to the program Ottawa Senators play-by-play broadcaster, good friend of the program, Dean Brown. Dean, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Dean. Obviously, these two teams are going to do battle this afternoon. You know, the Jets right on the in the thick of the playoff race in the Western Conference. The Senators can't quite say the same for the in the Eastern Conference playoff race. But you know, is this Ottawa Senators team the style of play? I mean, the results might not necessarily be there, but are they playing at a level higher and above that we saw last year when they had, you know, equally disappointing results?
I don't think so. You know, last year was, technically year one of the rebuild, but in a true rebuild like this one, you know, the old kind of rebuild, where you rip it down to the rafters and then start again, you know, not a band-aid patch and move on kind of rebuild, but this kind of rebuild, year one of the rebuild is really not rebuilding, it's tearing down. So this is really year one of the rebuilding part. So, you know, this team is kind of in a different place where they're playing a lot of really young, really inexperienced players. And you know, the coaching staff is trying to develop the culture of what they want this team to be when they get good, when the players that are on the way, you know, start getting at it. There's already a culture here. So this team is really has to be about hard work and about forecheck and about that kind of a game, because they don't have enough experience and they don't have enough high-end talent to be able to compete with, you know, most of the teams in the league, never mind the higher-end teams. And so really this team is more about culture building right now and about the way they're going to play more than anything else. So they're kind of in very different places compared to where they were last year. The whole focus is different than it was last year, you know.
You know, Dean, you mentioned the young players and building a culture, and we can't talk about the Ottawa Senators without talking about Anthony Duclair and Jean-Gabriel Pageau. Obviously, you know, both of these guys, you know, leading the Senators in scoring. You know, you're talking about Connor Brown is also tied with Anthony Duclair, but the point is Duclair and Pageau have been driving the bus offensively. And when you talk about, you know, those young players, and we won't get into the trade deadline yet and, you know, whether or not Pageau and Duclair are going to be around long term. But when you're talking about, you know, the young players, how important have these two players been when you talk about building the culture and kind of showing Brady Tkachuk and Thomas Chabot, Colin White, those types of players, you know, the importance of all those good habits and, you know, being a productive NHL player?
Well, I think probably more so Pageau. I think, you know, for Duclair, you know, I think he's been more this year in the prove it mode, prove it that you can stay in the NHL, because over the short period of his career, there's been more coaches who have given up on him than have believed in him. So I think he's in a different place leadership wise. You know, he's a guy that's trying to reestablish himself as an NHL player. And in the case of Pageau, he's one of his team's leaders. Him, Mark Borowiecki, a couple of other guys, you know, here's how we go, guys. So I think they're very, very important to not just on the ice, but how you handle yourself as an NHLer, you know, when you're in different cities, you know, what's going on, where things are, just getting acclimatized to the NHL with Brady Tkachuk and all the young players. So you have to have those kinds of guys on a team, on a rebuilding team. When you're in a rebuild like Ottawa is, you know, you don't necessarily have to have, you know, premier veteran players who are, you know, near the top of the league in scoring. Those kinds of guys often are just worried about themselves and may not end up being the kind of guys that are all that particularly good at nurturing or helping develop. But a guy like Pageau, who's always had to be a hardworking guy, always had to be an underdog guy because he's so small. There's so many people that have always thought he could never play at the next level, and he's become a really good NHL player. He's become a really, really good defensive player, become a very good character guy. So he is the kind of guy that's very good to have around young players on any team.
Dean Brown is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dean is the Senators play-by-play broadcaster on our sister station, TSN 1200 in Ottawa. The Jets and the Senators, 1 o'clock this afternoon as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Dean, Bobby Ryan has been away from the team all season long. He made an appearance at practice earlier this week. Was that a one-off, or is this a way of maybe, you know, a guy showcasing him as a potential trade deadline player? What's the latest, I guess, with Bobby Ryan and his future with the Senators?
Well, he's not going anywhere. I don't think that contract is tradable. I don't think anybody would ever take it. So I'm not sure that has anything to do with it. With him coming out of the NHL Player Assistance Program, it's really just more a part of the process. You know, he's got to start playing and practicing with the team again to, you know, get back into NHL shape. And it's really like his training camp. So him showing up at camp is start practicing with the team. He's been skating for a while now on his own, and it really is something that's mandated by the league. It's not mandated by the team. And when the league and the professionals they have that are dealing with Bobby and helping him along this path, when they think it's the right time for him to get back on the ice and play, then they hand it over to the team. But it really is more of a league thing than it is a team thing. And it's just a part of the next steps that come up. And I would imagine it's going to take him 3 weeks, a month. Or, you know, how long does it take to get an NHL player back in NHL shape? You know, usually in training camp, they start skating in August before training camp starts in September. So it's kind of the same thing for Bobby Ryan now, is that he's kind of got to get back to, NHL level, and that starts now. But I don't think there's any possibility that there's any rush to get him back on the ice. It's, it goes at the pace it goes.
If it comes to the point where he's ready to get back on the ice and play for the Senators, is the organization, welcoming him back with open arms? I mean, obviously, this is no fault. There's no fault at play here, but it's a bad contract in that it's not tradable. So, what's the future, I guess, with Bobby Ryan as a member of the Senators organization?
Well, those are really two different questions. They will open him, welcome him back with open arms, because this is a life thing. This is not a hockey thing. No. This is a life thing. And so they'll absolutely be open-armed about it. The contract and the hockey is a different question. And, I really don't know. He's going to be on this team until his contract expires. Like I said, that contract is virtually untradeable. And I think the only question would be, is this team willing to, or thinking about buying them out? Mm-hmm. And so far over the course of this franchise's history, they have been unwilling to buy people out. They just, as a matter of course, just don't seem to believe in that. And so I don't know if they would or not. But those two things to me, I think, are very separate issues.
And Dean, as you mentioned, obviously, with Bobby Ryan, this is a life issue. So we're just happy that, he's getting better, and it's great to see him back on the ice. So regardless if he plays this year, it's just good that, he's getting better for himself, because it is about, his life. It's
absolutely
not, it's not about hockey. So,
yeah.
Getting back to the Senators on ice, there's been a big switch, obviously, in net with Marcus Hogberg. Didn't have a great outing, I guess, against the Colorado Avalanche. But, you look at games against the Anaheim Ducks, New Jersey Devils, and Calgary Flames, and you look at save percentages of .943, .952, .929, pretty impressive stuff. What does this mean for the future of the Senators in that? Obviously, Craig Anderson's a pending UFA, and he doesn't have that many years left, unfortunately. But is this just more of the Senators seeing what they have in the system and kind of passing the torch a little bit to Marcus Hogberg?
Yeah, it is. It Craig is 38 years old, turning 39. He's going to be unrestricted free agent, and he's never even said whether he wants to continue playing or not, to be honest with you. He may end up playing somewhere next year, but he's never been willing to answer that question, whether he's going to continue. He had a different situation. His wife going through the battle of cancer and everything, her and the boys, they stay in Florida. That's where her support system is. So basically for most of the last 10 years, he's been up in Ottawa by himself during the wintertime. There's, his boys are in competitive baseball now, and Nicole is running around doing everything herself. And he's made enough money in his career where money's never going to be an issue for their family. So you do start to wonder whether he even wants to play next year. 10 years is a long time to be living away from your family for 5, 6, 7 months of the year. And so I don't think anybody would be all that shocked if Craig retired after this year. I think if he plays next year, it's going to be because it's a perfect situation for him. To be honest, it's a perfect situation for him next year to play and be the backup for Florida Panthers, because he lives about 5 minutes away from the rink in Florida. So that's a possibility. But for Ottawa, this absolutely is the changing of the guard. If you just look at the contract status, you know, Anders Nielsen, who's still out with the concussion, signed for the next 2 years, and Holtberg's contract next year becomes a one-way. So you can tell that they've been planning that next year it'll be Nielsen and Holtberg. And so with Nielsen out right now, this is a great chance to get Holtberg in a lot of NHL games, to get him some experience, more experience than you get in the AHL, and, you know, see where he's at. And so you start camp next year with the two guys that you know are going to be your guys. So it is definitely a passing of a torch. And let's face it, in any business, not just hockey, the young always replace the old at some point. And Ottawa, right now, that's underway.
Dean Brown is our guest. Dean is the Ottawa Senators play-by-play broadcaster. The Jets and the Senators, 1 o'clock this afternoon here on TSN Radio 1290, part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. Dean, how has Brady Tkachuk changed? How has he developed between year two and year one, or year one and year two of his pro career?
He's just gotten more mature. He's, you know, like anything else, he's just grown as a person, and probably most notably, he's grown, period. I don't know what he is right now, but between him weighing in for development camp, not main training camp, but development camp last July and the start of this year, he had grown an inch and gained 22 pounds. So the thing that has made Brady Tkachuk even more difficult for people to deal with, especially in front of the net, is the fact that Brady is bigger now. And that's not good news for most teams. He's become exceptional at just being in the way, being in front of the net, tipping pucks, and he has become a guy that is very, very difficult for other teams to deal with. And he's one of those guys that most other teams, and especially goaltenders, hate. They just hate him because he gets in there and he wants you to punch him in the back of the head. He's always saying things to people. As dirty and as mean as it can get, especially in front of the net, that's what he wants. He wants that. He likes that. And he wants to get you angry with him. The league actually, I didn't know this until somebody pointed out to me. The league actually, if you go and extend the stats on the NHL.com webpage, it's not a secret thing, anybody can access it. There's a site that tells you who draws the most penalties. Brady Tkachuk draws the most penalties in the NHL because he infuriates more people than anybody else in the league. So that's the way he plays, and he's only more difficult to play now because he's getting even bigger, you know, and he's a guy that the coach likes to say all the time that he drags people into battle, but, you know, other players on the team have to get in there and kind of muck it up because they see Brady doing it all by himself and they feel bad about it. So, well, you just look at the last game, you know, he got a goal and he led both teams in shots with 7 and he led both teams in hits with 10. And there's not very many times where a guy who's, you know, a top 6 forward is second in the league in hits. But Brady Tkachuk is second in the league in hits behind Reeves, you know. So it's usually not something where you see top 6 players leading, but that's his game, hitting people, getting in front of the net, and making people hate him.
Dean, before we let you go, just really quickly, how excited are Ottawa Senators fans about Erik Brännström? If you haven't seen his goal last night that he scored for Belleville against the Toronto Marlies, it's a goal of the year candidate. Just how excited are fans to see this defenseman that they acquired in the Mark Stone trade?
Well, to be honest with you, they're really not. You know, they saw him for the first, 25 games of the year, and Erik was not the electrifying player that I think they thought they were going to get. You know, Erik Karlsson 2.0 or Erik Light. And so they really never saw that because he was trying to find his way in the NHL, and I think he was thinking and worrying more about playing solid defense than he was being himself. And so, you know, Ottawa fans haven't really seen that. That's what they think he's going to be down the road. But to be honest with you, in Ottawa, you know, right now with where they're at and where San Jose is at, because Ottawa has San Jose's first-round pick this year, mm-hmm. I think probably the excitement in Ottawa right now, when you talk about young players, will be a couple of players they don't even have yet. You know, I think in Ottawa, people sit there in their office and they play that draft simulator. They just sit there and push the button to see what they're going to get. There's a very real chance that Ottawa's going to get 2 picks in the top 10 this year, maybe even 2 picks in the top 5. And so I think the excitement in Ottawa right now, when you're talking about young players, is probably more about, the players are going to get this year. They've got 5 picks in the first 2 rounds. So I think they're still waiting to see what Brännström is going to become. And I know the goal you're talking about, it is pretty unbelievable. But Ottawa fans really haven't seen that yet. They haven't seen that side of Erik yet. And they're hoping and they're wishing that that becomes an everyday thing. But I think right now in Ottawa, the excitement in this franchise right now is really more about what's coming up in the draft this year. And they know that one way or the other, Ottawa's going to get a couple or maybe more of very, very high-level players. And you know, this may well end up being, we may look back in history, this draft may end up being really the thing that turns this franchise in a major way.
So we should be talking about Alexi and Quinton instead of
Eric.
Well, you can, hey, it's your show, guys. You can talk about that in Ottawa. There's a lot more talk about the draft than there is about Eric Branstrom right now.
There you go. Dean Brown is going to be on the call this afternoon for the Jets and the Senators. He's with TSN 1200 in Ottawa. Dean, always appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great call this afternoon.
Anytime, boys. See you at the ring.
Take care, Dean. Thanks again. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. When we come back, Jacob Trouba makes his return to Winnipeg on Tuesday night. What will the reaction be for the Jets' former defenseman? You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Puck is sent toward the line, kept in by Panarin, danced into where the corner, controlled by the Rangers, back up top for Trouba, winds up, slap shot, scores. Jacob Trouba, bar down or post in, one of the two. It was up high. Penalty was over. It's an even strength goal, and the Rangers lead it 3-2.
That was back the first game of the season, October 3rd. Remember that, Ezzy?
The old Mark Stahl spinorama.
Jacob Trouba wiring a shot past Connor Hellebuck.
Stahl scored the first goal, though.
Okay. Right, yeah, we were talking about Jacob Trouba here. I'm not talking about Mark Stahl.
Okay.
I mean, the spinorama was nice and all, but it just sort of seemed random.
Sorry.
It's okay. I'll forgive you.
I just remember that goal because you never see spinorama goals anymore.
Well, you know, the ghost of Dennis Savard lives. I guess he's not
dead.
What about
that beautiful spinorama goal that Anson Carter scored in the 2003 World Championship?
You are a savant. Do you know that?
I'm something.
You're something. You'll forgive me for not remembering the two that, I mean, no, yeah.
Remember it was reviewed and they had to zoom in on the
yes,
puck?
Yes, yes, yes. It was the game-winning goal. Wasn't it in overtime almost?
Yeah.
Like it just barely crossed over the line?
Yeah.
I remember the goal that you're talking about, but still, I mean, I wouldn't have been able to tell you that it was Anson Carter.
Steve Stales was on that 17 team?
17 years ago.
You know who Anson Carter scored that goal on? Mikkel Telkvist.
This is what I mean by you're a savant. Also, you definitely had way more time on your hands back in 2003 than you do now to be able to remember Mikkel Telkvist.
Yeah, a lot of late nights.
Yeah.
A lot more beers.
Yeah. A lot more beers is right. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall. Tuesday night, Jacob Trouba makes his return to Winnipeg since the trade this past summer.
Yep.
What reaction does he get?
You know, it's something that I really haven't thought about a lot.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I mean, you know, maybe part of that has to do with me having two kids now. But, like, to me, it just doesn't feel like there's as much hype as there should be. Like, Jacob Trouba played, you know, many seasons with the Winnipeg Jets. Like, you go back to 2013 and... You know, Trouba's been a top pairing guy for the Jets for several years there with Josh Morrissey. And, you know, it just doesn't seem like, you know, there's a lot of buzz. Like, I don't know. I don't think Jets fans are going to necessarily boo or if I had to guess, I would probably say that he'll get a decent ovation. Like, I just don't think there's as much vitriol. You like that word?
I did. It's a very Drew word, I must say.
Yeah, I just don't think there's as much animosity for Trouba as some people think. Like,
is that because Pionk has played so well this season and he sort of fit in so seamlessly? Meanwhile, you look at Trouba's performance. I mean, I think the lasting memory that people have of Jacob Trouba in Winnipeg is him trying and failing to rag the puck in game five on home ice against the Blues.
You had to bring that up, didn't
you? Well, but I think that's what people think about Jacob Trouba the most. You know, there's the trade demand, but then so many years passed, and his last game on home ice featured him, you know, having poor hockey sense behind the Jets' own net. And the resulting play, the result being the puck behind Connor Hellebuck.
He had 50 points last year, Drew.
I know.
Trouba had a good year last year.
He had a very good year.
Yes, I agree. That was probably poor judgment, you know, knowing how much time was, what was there, 20 seconds left
something
on
like
the
that.
Clock or something, if I remember correctly. So, I mean, that play was not a good one. But Trouba was a really good defenseman for many years for the Jets. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, and I got to be honest with you, I kind of hate this when people compare, you know, Trouba's numbers to Pionk's numbers. Like, first of all, the Rangers are not good this year.
No.
So when you look at Trouba's numbers and, you know, he's only got 23 points, like, yeah, like, those aren't good numbers, but, like, look at his usage as well. Like, you know, they have other players there that are getting opportunities on the power play, like a guy like Tony DeAngelo.
Adam Fox.
Yeah, so, yeah. like you got to factor that in, right? Like, Trouba was playing top power play minutes last year, or at the very least, he was playing on the second power play unit, right? So, yeah, like, he's got 10 less points than Pionk, and he makes a lot more money, so in that sense. But, like, I like Pionk. But Trouba's a better defenseman than Neil Pionk.
Let me read you this quote from Larry Brooks. Larry Brooks in the New York Post, one of the most well-read hockey columnists.
Sure.
You know, covers the Rangers and certainly isn't afraid to put his opinions on paper. Well, this is a quote in the start. You know, well, Jacob Trouba's no move clause kicks in on July 1st, and management would be foolish not to listen if there are inquiries into the 25-year-old defenseman before then. The Rangers need more from Trouba, who has been erratic and skittish through his first year in New York. Now, if Larry Brooks is floating the possibility that the Rangers, just after signing Trouba to a 7-year contract extension, that the management might be looking to trade him, I mean, that's a pretty bold change in direction that Larry Brooks is suggesting management should explore.
You have to be very careful when a player's not having necessarily an offensive year that you'd expect out of him. Like, you expect Trouba to be a 40-point guy, probably at least, you know, maybe 45 to 50 points. But you have to look at this team, and this team is a rebuilding team. And yes, you know, we talked about Tony DeAngelo, who they acquired in a trade, and then Adam Fox. Like, Adam Fox is a good young defenseman. I think he's 21 years old. Like, they have some good pieces there. When you start talking about trading Trouba in a year in which you're rebuilding and the team has been in disarray, like, not, I shouldn't say that. The team is not in disarray, but it's not a very good team, and they knew it wasn't going to be a very good team. Like, nobody was predicting the Rangers to be a Stanley Cup contender, or nobody should have been, but Artemi Panarin's had a nice year. Like, Chris Kreider's had a good year. He's probably going to be traded. Mika Zibanejad, really good player, but, like, you have to look at it at a macro level. And I think it's ridiculous if they're talking about trading Trouba.
Well, Larry Brooks writes things, and Larry Brooks, it doesn't just stir the pot for no reason. So I think it's an interesting comment. And I think what people realize, or maybe what they're realizing in New York about Jacob Trouba, is he looks better on paper than he does watching him game in, game out.
I don't know about that. Like, Jacob Trouba to me is a shutdown defenseman who has offensive upside. Like, he had 50 points last year. Like, that wasn't, like, you can talk all you want about, you know, passing the puck to Blake Wheeler and Patrick Laine, Mark Scheifele. You don't put up 50 points as a defenseman as a mistake. And yes, does he have some shortcomings? But, like, come on, we're talking, like, when the Rangers traded for Jacob Trouba, the majority of people were saying that that was a complete ripoff. I wasn't one of those people, but all I'm saying,
as in the Jets got ripped off.
Yeah, and all I'm saying is, to now look at it, and it's easy. I agree. It's easy to look at the numbers and say, oh, he's 23 points. He's, you know, whatever he is, minus 10 or whatever he is. Like, it's easy to look at those numbers and say, oh, he's not very good. But this is still a guy that was a top pairing defenseman with Josh Morrissey when the Jets went to the West Final and everybody was praising how good the Jets top pair is. So at 25 years old, you can't start to say that, you know, Jacob Trouba is not as good of a defenseman as he was, you know, just a year ago. That's all I'm saying.
When we come back, Colin Stevenson of Newsday is going to join us for more about the Rangers and more about Jacob Trouba's return to Winnipeg. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Senators, 1 o'clock puck drop at Bell MTS Place later on this afternoon. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your texts to 1290.90, where standard messaging rates will apply, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Jacob Trouba makes his return to Winnipeg on Tuesday night. We're now joined by Colin Stevenson of Newsday newspaper in New York to talk about the Rangers and to talk about Mr. Trouba coming back to Winnipeg. Colin, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. How's it going out there? It's pretty early, huh?
No, it's 9 o'clock. We're doing okay. We've been up since 7. We're loaded with coffee. How are you?
Yeah, we've had a couple naps.
Yeah, I've only had one cup myself. So yeah.
There you go.
So forgive me if I'm a little sleepy.
That's okay. We've been sleepy for the last couple hours, so we're all in the same boat together. Colin, obviously brought you on to talk about the Rangers. They make their lone visit to Winnipeg on Tuesday night, and that'll be Jacob Trouba's return to Winnipeg. If you had to grade his first season as a member of the Rangers, what grade would you hand out?
Oh, that's an interesting way to put it. I would say probably an A-. He hasn't scored as much as probably we expected he would have, but he plays on the top pair, and he gives them a presence that they didn't have last year, and I think he's a guy that they intend to build around. I think he's been okay. I mean, he's been better than okay, actually. He's not been a standout, but definitely, I would say, probably been their best guy in the back there.
Colin, we have to talk to you about Chris Kreider. We were actually talking about him last segment. He's one of the top guys on the TSN trade bait board, and you hear maybe as many as half a dozen teams are interested in Chris Kreider. Are you expecting this to maybe go right up until the trade deadline, or does Jeff Gorton maybe decide to capitalize on some of those offers that he's receiving and trade Chris Kreider maybe as early as next week?
Well, no, I think it's going to go all the way to February 24th or, you know, around there. Look, the Rangers are in a tricky position, right? I mean, we know today, February 8th, is the second anniversary of the famous letter to the fans, right, where they explain to the fans that, hey, we're going to go into a rebuild mode. So they're still in rebuilding. They bottomed out last season. They started their climb back up, and part of it was getting Trouba, and part of it was signing Artemi Panera, and probably the first thing was trading for Adam Fox, which was probably the first trade they had made where they gave up picks to get a guy as opposed to trading a guy away to get, you know, futures or something like that. So they're on the rise, but they're still in the rebuild, right? So the question then that they have to figure out is, yeah, they can trade Chris Kreider, but given where they are in their rebuild, which is on the way up and probably going to be in a good place next year or the year after, might they be better served keeping Kreider? Because, you know, here's a guy who's a veteran leader in that locker room. He's playing awesome right now. He's just last night scored his 20th goal. He's had a partnership with Mika Zibanejad. They've been playing together for 4 years. Mika loves him. So, you know, there are arguments to keep him. You know, if you think you're at a place where he can be of value to you next year and beyond. Now, obviously, the question is, can they afford him? Well, according to Pierre LeBrun, who tweeted this on Thursday, they're going to sit down, management's going to sit down with his agent sometime in the next couple of days. And so they'll figure out what the parameters are, and maybe they'll figure out whether they can afford him or not. If they can afford him, then I think they may keep him. So I would think whatever decision they make, it's going to be later rather than sooner. Put it that way.
Colin Stevenson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Senators, 1 o'clock this afternoon. Colin covers the New York Rangers for Newsday newspaper. The Rangers in town on Tuesday night to meet the Jets. And Colin, you know, you talk about the Rangers and, you know, in the course of a rebuild. You look at this roster, though, and it doesn't look like a roster that is, you know, quote unquote rebuilding. You have a lot of talent. You have Artemi Panarin, who's clearly one of the best skilled players in the NHL. You have Anthony DeAngelo, who's absolutely tearing it up on the back end, a guy that, you know, is a bit of a late bloomer, having been a first round pick about 6 years ago or so. So
right.
Why is there that rebuilding mentality still when it seems like this Rangers team is sort of beyond that point?
No, I don't know that they're beyond it yet, though. I mean, I think that, you know, look, they still have a lot of young guys. All their 21-year-olds are about to turn 22, but they have a third pair of guys that's two 21-year-old rookies. I mean, yeah, I don't know that I don't know what you can expect out of that. You know, they have they sent down Libor Hájek earlier. You know, so for a time they had three 21-year-old rookie defensemen on their team. They sent Hájek down. You know, Filip Chytil is their third line center, getting better and better every night. He's 20. And Kako, of course, Kaapo Kakko is the number two pick overall. He's 18 years old. So they're very, very young. And even D'Angelo turned 24 just the beginning of this season. So, you know, he's actually still young, although he's come a long way. I mean, he's gone from a bit of a hothead in his younger days who sort of was in and out of trouble to a solid citizen this season. But they're still pretty young. Pavel Buchnevich is 24, which is, you know, I don't know if that's quite middle age in NHL years, but he's still a relatively young guy, they feel like. And so the thinking is that, you know, their best years are ahead of them. They're not, you know, let's be honest. I mean, they are trying to make the playoffs this year, but I don't see that happening. They're 9 points out and couldn't beat Buffalo last night. So
everybody beats Buffalo.
Yeah, and that was the thing. Like they played Detroit last weekend, and they had a home and home back to back series against Detroit, and you know they took 4 points from Detroit. And I said to Mark Stahl afterwards, I'm like, you know, it's important to take maximum points from teams like this. And he said, yes, because other teams do take maximum points off them. So, you know, when you don't beat Buffalo at home, you know, and you fall behind 3-0 and you know, you need two goals in the final 3 minutes of the game to make it respectable, that's not a good sign for your playoff hopes. So, I mean, you know, they still are looking ahead a little bit, and as such, you know, they will make decisions based on the fact that they think that their best days are ahead of them. So that means they are looking probably, most likely, to move some people. So Kreider, as you mentioned, is number one. D'Angelo is going to be a restricted free agent with arbitration rights this summer. So, you know, he figures to get a big raise, and, you know, and he might be one of those guys that they'd be willing to move for the right return as well, because, you know, they have Adam Fox already on the team. They have Trouba. They have a young defenseman in Hartford in the AHL. Joey Keane, who, you know, is a rookie there this year and putting up really good numbers. They have a guy in Sweden, one of their first-round picks from 2018, Nils Lundqvist. He's having a fine year in the Swedish league. So they have people, theoretically at least, who could replace D'Angelo if they decide, you know, that the return for him is worth it. So, I mean, so there are guys, you know, Jesper Foss is going to be an unrestricted free agent. Ryan Strome is a restricted free agent with arbitration rights. He's having a good year. So if they feel like they can get good return on some of these guys, they'll move some of these guys.
You know, Colin, you just mentioned Ryan Strome, and that's who I wanted to ask you about. Like, why isn't he getting more love? Because when you talk about that trade that brought him to New York, it was Ryan Spooner for Ryan Strome. Strome, obviously, you know, coming from Edmonton, he was part of that Jordan Eberle trade, and you know, Strome didn't work out in Edmonton, but this is a former fifth overall pick. He's on pace for career highs in points. He's got 12 goals in 44 points, and I realize a lot of people are pointing out that he's playing with Artemi Panarin, but you know, he's still been a fit with Panarin, so why isn't Strome getting more love? Because as you mentioned, he's putting together a really nice season.
He, you know what? Strome, I believe, is one of David Quinn's very favorites. From the day the guy got here, all he's done is go wherever Quinn moved him, whether it was on the wing or there's in the middle, up, down in the lineup, wherever. And he's done a good job. Last year, he had a great year with them after he came over in the trade. He was something of a revelation, and yes, you're right. He has played most of this season with Panarin, and maybe some of his offensive production is directly tied to the fact that he's playing with Panarin. But he has played well for them, and he is a guy that that can go. You know, he kills penalties. He plays on the power play. He can win faceoffs. He can do a lot of different things for him, and he's not an old guy. You know, he's still in his 20s. And he really is kind of the, you know, a utility knife kind of player for David Quinn. And so Quinn likes him quite a bit. And yeah, they probably would keep him. Again, it depends on what decision management makes as to where they are in the rebuild and whether, you know, you're better served holding on to a player like this or moving him now you know, and sort of prepping yourself for down the road a little bit. I think that he's a good fit for them now, and I think that ideally they'd like to keep him. But, you know, if the return is worth it, and if, let's say, you know, and some of this, you know, hinges on Kreider too. If they decide to keep Kreider, then they can't keep everybody else because they won't have the money under the salary cap. So, what we do have to see. But no, Dan Quinn's quite fond of him. So he's, you know, he gets a lot of love here.
Colin Stevenson.
And the media likes him, by the way, too. So, you know, that counts for something.
Colin Stevenson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the New York Rangers for Newsday newspaper. Colin, a couple more for you. I guess we'd be remiss in not also mentioning Brendan Lemieux's return to Winnipeg. We talked about Trouba. So how has Lemieux looked in his you know, first full season as a member of the Rangers, and is he a key piece of their future going forward?
You know, I would have said he was coming out of last season. They really liked him quite a bit. He gives them something that nobody else gives them, which is a feistiness. Well, D'Angelo to some degree, but, you know, as a forward, it probably has more of an impact. It gives them a feistiness up front that they don't get from anyone else. He's got speed, and he's got that net front presence that, again, they don't get anywhere else. But he has, I wouldn't say struggled necessarily, but he's, you know, he's been hurt this year. He's been banged up. Most recently came back from like a broken hand or something. And, you know, he had a start on the fourth line. He was back and forth between the fourth and the third lines. I don't think he's quite back in, you know, 100% shape yet. So we'll see. But they do like him because, again, you know, that feistiness and the ability to play and be feisty is not a combination that they're getting from anywhere else. So I think he's a guy that they like quite a bit. But I think the end of the season here will be big for him to kind of cement his place in the lineup and his role in the group, I think.
Last question for you. Fill in the blank, fill in the number here. Henrik Lundqvist is the New York Rangers number blank goaltender.
3.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, like one of my colleagues, Larry Brooks, wrote a column, mm-hmm. Last week, actually wrote a couple columns. One he spoke to Martin Brodeur and talked about, you know, as a goaltender ages. And one of the things that I remember from that interview with Brodeur in that column was he said, listen, if you got a chance to play 10 out of 13, he could probably fix some things and get into a groove and everything will be just fine. But the problem is he's not going to get a chance to play 10 out of 13, mm-hmm. not with the way Igor Shesterkin has played. Igor Shesterkin has been magnificent since he's come up. And, you know, he, I believe at this point, is their number one goaltender of the moment. And I think, the other guy, you know, Alexander Georgiev, who's going to be 24, I think, this week, he's been pretty good too. So he's probably more suited to backup duty than Lundqvist is. And so if Lundqvist is not going to be the guy that's going to play, you know, 2 out of every 3 games or what have you, then I don't think he's going to be the player he was, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, even 2 years ago. So I think at this point, Igor is number one. And I think, you know, I think that Georgiev, for as long as he's on the roster, and they have plays, and maybe they'll trade somebody. And if they do, it would be Georgiev. But I don't think they want to. I think Georgiev is going to be number two, and Hank is here for as long as he's here. You know?
Hard to believe that we'd ever be in the situation where Henrik Lundqvist would be the number three goaltender, but here we are. Colin Stevenson covers the New York Rangers for Newsday newspaper. Colin, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
The pleasure is mine, gentlemen.
Take care, Colin.
Enjoy your game today.
Thank you. We'll see you on Tuesday. Take care.
See you Tuesday. Yeah. Bye.
When we come back, we look at the TSN trade bait board. We discuss the deal of the week, that being between the Leafs and the Kings. Much more to come. Eddie Olczyk coming up at the bottom of the hour as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're celebrating 11 years on Winnipeg Radio. You're on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
This is a big win for the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's a perfect intersection of necessity meeting opportunity. And for the Toronto Maple Leafs, you cannot continue to go down the path of a backup goaltending situation that simply was not providing the necessary results.
I'm just glad Craig Button didn't say that it was the perfect combination of sexy and cute, because that would have been a little bit weird. But anyways, it seems like all...
What?
That's from that movie, the one with, what's his name? Oh, shoot. I forget. It's a line from a movie. Not a, one of those rom-coms that you're...
You can't even remember the movie. You quote the line.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the movie.
What is going on here?
It's with Steve Carell is in it.
40-year-old virgin.
No. It's like a rom-com.
The Office.
No, it's a movie, not a TV show.
Wasn't there an Office movie?
I don't think so. If somebody on Twitter will remember what it is.
Crazy Stupid Love.
Thank you, Sean. Crazy Stupid Love. I knew Sean. There you go. There's a guy.
there's a guy that's watched some rom-coms with Mandy,
Exactly. Engaged to be married, because Sean, he knew the name of Crazy Stupid Love off the top of his fingertips right there.
I love that movie. No.
Anyways, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Los Angeles Kings getting together to make a trade earlier this week.
They love to trade.
They did it last year at the trade deadline as well. Toronto gets Jack Campbell and Kyle Clifford. The Kings get Trevor Moore. They get a third round pick, and they get a conditional third round pick that can turn into a second round pick. From my perspective, I mean, we knew that the Leafs had to do something because Michael Hutchinson's career as a NHL goaltender has just come to an end. It's pretty clear to that effect. He's not NHL quality anymore. And you're not sure if Jack Campbell is or isn't, but at least it's fresh blood in there. From my perspective, though, the Los Angeles Kings, the return they get here, underwhelms me. It underwhelms me. You have a team that's desperate in the Toronto Maple Leafs, and it doesn't seem like the Kings really held them for as much ransom as they could have.
Yeah, and you know what? It's interesting. You talk about Kyle Clifford, and he's kind of the forgotten guy in this trade. First off, he's from Ontario.
Yeah.
And he's not as old as some people think. He's 29 years old. He's obviously, won a couple Stanley Cups. He's a veteran player, though.
Yeah.
He's been in the league for a long time. But, that's a guy that I would love to have on my fourth line. Like, that's a guy that, maybe can kill some penalties. He can chip in the odd goal. Plays with that truculence that Brian Burke likes, right?
And that Toronto doesn't have. I mean, Kyle Clifford can fit into their roster.
And that's why I agree with you that I think the return is underwhelming. The conditions that are on the draft picks to me are very curious as well. If you remember the conditions of the third round pick to become for that third round pick in 2021 to become a second round pick, Jack Campbell has to win 6 games and the Leafs have to make the playoffs. That's very doable.
Yeah, which is, I think, good for the Kings in that sense.
And that, I agree, but like, if that doesn't happen...
Yeah, then you get a second-round pick and...
No, then you don't. You get a third-round pick.
So you're right. Then the trade is... Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Like, to me, it should have probably been a second-round pick, not conditional, for that. Like, if they get a second and third-round pick for those two... Like,
and Trevor Moore for those two.
Yeah, and Trevor Moore, then, to me... But, yeah, I agree. The return is a little underwhelming because we've seen Jack Campbell come in here... In Winnipeg, I'm talking about, remember when he was with Dallas?
Yeah.
Like, Jack Campbell's a good backup goalie. His numbers are actually pretty good on a bad Kings team. He's a former first-round pick, so like Campbell,
6th overall.
Yeah, so Campbell is a guy that I think is exactly what the Leafs needed. And, there's that history, if you've been following it with Kyle Dubas in the OHL, right? So... Even though that didn't
Dubas traded for him,
right, didn't end up well, but
no, it was a bad trade as it happened.
So, but Jack Campbell is very familiar to Kyle Dubas, so I think Kyle Dubas does a great job here, and I'm going to be very curious, with about 2 weeks to go before the trade deadline, if Kyle Dubas is done, because we expect the Leafs to be in this playoff race right up until the end with other teams like Florida, right, mm-hmm. And that Atlantic Division is stacked, so it's not a guarantee at all that the Leafs are going to get into the playoffs, but I think this trade needed to happen. Freddie Anderson, they've announced recently he's not going to play the next 2 games, so Jack Campbell is going to start the next 2 games, seemingly. So
it's basically a battle between Florida and the Leafs for the final Atlantic Division playoff spot.
Boston and Tampa Bay are too far ahead.
And I don't think that either Florida or Toronto are going to be in the wild card position. They're still they're a couple points behind that.
Yeah.
So it really, I think, is for that third spot in the Atlantic Division and for the right to lose to the Lightning in the first round. But I would have said that last year about the Blue Jackets. When we come back, Eddie Olczyk joins us to talk about his book. He's going to be in Winnipeg tomorrow signing copies of his book, doing a reading. We'll talk to the former Winnipeg Jets player, the current NHL on NBC broadcaster, Eddie Olczyk, up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number 3. 3. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us via text message. 129090 is how to do that. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
The book is called Beating the Odds in Hockey and in Life. We're pleased to welcome to the program former Winnipeg Jets player, current NHL on NBC analyst, Eddie Olczyk. Eddie, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Our pleasure to have you. You're going to be in Winnipeg tomorrow afternoon, Sunday, 1 o'clock at McNally Robinson Booksellers, doing an autograph signing about the book. So, Eddie, you know, it was a great read, and congratulations, I guess, first and foremost on beating cancer, because that's, you know, the most important part of this entire thing is to be able to say you're cancer-free. So take us back almost 2 years ago, March 22nd, 2018. You're on air. And you're with your colleague, Pat Foley. Tell us what it's like to tell the audience that you were cancer-free.
Well, it was obviously an emotional announcement because my diagnosis became so public. And when you're in a so-called public eye, it's hard to go hide under a rock and, you know, people want to know where you are and how come you're not working and all that type of stuff. So I think when we eventually, you know, we went public back in the middle of August of 17. And when I got diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer, I felt that with my presence in the media, my so-called name, that I had the ability to make a difference in our society, not only the National Hockey League, but in society, and say, hey, you know, like this can happen to anybody. Cancer does not discriminate. And one day I wake up, I can't go to the bathroom. And next thing you know, I'm having a 6-hour surgery, removing 14 inches of my colon and a tumor the size of my fist. And, if one person reads my book, if one person hears us on the radio today, or one person knows my story, hopefully I can either have them be proactive and to make sure that they're getting checked. If you're not feeling well, I don't care what it is. If you're not feeling well, raise your hand and go see a physician or a doctor. Demand to see somebody. Or in particular with a colonoscopy, the numbers are way up in North America for colon cancer. And the recommended age now is 45. When I got sick, it was 50. And my oncologist told me that if I would have had a colonoscopy when I was 45, they would have saved me from having to go through 6 months of hell with the chemotherapy. So pushing it forward, making that announcement, and having known for a couple of weeks, you know, it was obviously a huge relief. And look, cancer is always going to be with Eddie Olczyk and my family. And you know, every time I go to the doctor every 3 months, I still get, you know, anxiety and you know, worried and, you know, wondering what the test results are going to say. But, you know, proud to say I'm approaching my 2-year anniversary. And I just hope that I can make a difference in somebody's life out there to either make them more aware or, quite honestly, if they read my story, scare them into making sure that they get checked out. Because anybody that's been in a cancer battle certainly knows what I'm talking about, or any of us that have been affected. And it's very rare that you meet anybody that isn't affected by this horrible disease. And hopefully I can inspire that one person. And if I did, then it was well worth the 16 months of pen to paper to write the book.
You know, Eddie, I've had a chance to read the book, and you know, it's unbelievable. And obviously, we encourage everybody to pick it up, and you know, obviously, go have it signed tomorrow at McNally Robinson. And in the book, you talk about November 10th, 1990. That was the day that you found out that you were traded to the Winnipeg Jets. Your wife Diana is pregnant at the time with your second child, Thomas. You guys call him Tommy, and she goes into labor. You're in the delivery room. You have a game for the Leafs that night. You tell the Leafs that you're going to be able to play that night, and then you find out that the Leafs want to talk to you on the phone, and then you you find out that you're traded to the Jets as your wife is in active labor. How hard was that at the time to deal with it? I mean, that's the obvious question.
Better question is also...
I laugh about it now, and certainly I wasn't laughing when I walked back into the delivery room after the nurse handed me a note and said the Maple Leafs want to talk to you, and I thought they were just, you know, calling to check up on my wife, and sure enough, they told me... we hate to do this to you, but we just traded you to the Winnipeg Jets. And I'm thinking, how in the hell am I going to go back in the delivery room with my wife on her back on a scale of 1 to 10 at about an 8, getting ready to give birth to our second child? How am I going to tell her, you know, we just got traded? And I walk into the room. I was gone maybe 5 minutes, because once they told me I was traded, I, like, just went into a zone. I was like, man, I better call my dad. I better call my agent. I'm going to call Mark Osborne. You know, Ozzy and I got traded to the Jets. And I go back, and my wife pretty much looks over at me, and the doctor's at the foot of the bed, and she's like, where in the hell have you been? And I'm like, uh-oh, this is not going to end well here. And I made up some crock that my aunt was sick, and she looked at me and, like, with that, you know, typical look, it was like, okay, you're not telling me the truth. And then she just looked at the ceiling and then looked back at me, and then she says, where are we going? And I'm like, holy cow, pregnant and psychic. I'm like, holy cow, this is unbelievable. So I figured it was a game, you know. I was trying to take the edge off, and I said yes. And she just looked at me, looked at the ceiling, and she just blurted out Winnipeg. And I was just like, oh my goodness, how in the hell did she know that? And that's how I became a Winnipeg Jet. And not only, obviously, you know, having four children, you know, four of the greatest days of my life, without question. But that's the day I became a Winnipeg Jet, and I think I always will be a Winnipeg Jet, regardless of where I've been over my years. And it ended up being, you know, an incredible place to live and raise a family, and I'll be forever grateful to the support that I got as a player, as a person in the community, and the way that they treated my family. You know, two different times, two different stints with the original Jets, and I'm very proud of that, and it's always great to get back to the Peg. And looking forward to the book signing tomorrow, and then we got a big hockey game tomorrow night. I know the Jets got one this afternoon against the Sens, but I'll be in town as well broadcasting a game between the Hawks and Jets tomorrow night. So always, you know, that date, obviously my son's birthday, Tommy, you know, hard to believe he's going to be 30 years old already, and it's a long, long time ago, but my appreciation and love for Winnipeg and the Winnipeg Jets will always be there, and always look forward to coming back in town.
Yeah, time certainly does fly. The book is called Beating the Odds in Hockey and in Life. It's by Eddie Olchek, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's going to be signing copies tomorrow, 1 o'clock in the afternoon at McNally Robinson on Grant Avenue. Now, Eddie, I mean, as much as you're known for your hockey coverage and your hockey analysis, horse racing has also become a passionate part of your life. My wife is actually from Kentucky. Part of our wedding festivities, we're at Keeneland, a track I'm sure you know very well. So, you know, why horse racing? How did that come to be? And there's a great story in the book. Can you tell us about the 92-93 preseason with the Jets, Mr. Bowtie, and the Best Western Motel in Grand Forks, North Dakota?
Well, first, you know, my passion for horse racing started as a young kid when I was 12 years old, growing up in Chicago, and just went to the track for the first time with a friend of mine and his dad, who was our hockey manager. And you know, seeing these amazing animals, 1,200 pounds, going 35 miles an hour with these crazy humans on the back of them, I just thought it was like, I thought it was the greatest thing. I thought it was like being a goalie. You got to be crazy to be a goalie. I thought it was the same thing about a jockey. And I just, you know, I just became just, it's my passion. I've never drank in my life. I've never done drugs. My release has always been going to the racetrack. And regardless of where I laid my hat, especially when I came to the Peg, I got a chance to see my good friend Double B, Darren Dunn, who's the man in charge out there at the Downs, at Assiniboia Downs, and we'd go there quite often and hang out. And I see a lot of correlation between racetrack people that work on the backstretch and hockey people, the people behind the scenes, so the trainers, the hot walkers, the grooms people, the exercise riders, and no different in hockey. I mean, I say in the book, the trainer, the hockey trainer, both medical and equipment, are the lifeline of a hockey player. And it's the first thing I told when I was coaching in Pittsburgh back some 15 years ago. It's the first thing I said to my players. I said, look, the quickest way to get on my bad side is to disrespect this dressing room or disrespect the trainers. The trainers are a lifeline of a hockey player. And I just see a lot of the hard work that goes in behind the scenes that helps the product both on the track and on the ice. And I think it's just grown from there. So, you know, for me, it's always been a release, and I've owned, and, you know, I'm the lead handicapper on NBC down here in the States for the Triple Crown and the Breeders' Cup. So I've worked it into, a job as well, but it truly is a passion. But, you know, that training camp back in 92-93, John Paddock was our coach, and I've been in the league, you know, almost 8 or 9 years at that particular time, and my horse was running in Chicago. And I knew that he had a pretty good shot, but it happened to be the same day that we had an exhibition game. I think it was in Edmonton. And earlier in the week, I had gone to John and said, "Look, I'll play every other game. I'll play 9 games if you need me to, but I just need this one off because I need to, try to fund the account." And he says, "All right, well, you know, we'll figure it out." So I go to the rink that morning. I think it was a Thursday. For some reason, I think it was a Thursday. And the lineup is up for the game to go to Edmonton. And I'm in the lineup. And I'm like in panic mode. I'm like, I can't play. I mean, I gotta get to Grand Forks, and I gotta get to the Best Western where they're taking a bet on Mr. Bowtie. And so I went and saw John, and John was like, "Oh yeah, yeah." So he made the change, and I did my thing, and I got in my car, and I took a couple of bucks for the trainers and for John, and a bunch of the guys, and I went down there, and Mr. Bowtie did what he was supposed to do, and I guess the Cliff Notes version of the story is that I took them for everything that they had, and they couldn't pay me, so they had to give me a couple of IOUs, and I drove back to the peg and dispersed what they gave me, and I think I sent, maybe a couple of our trainers down to go and pick up the rest of the cash. So we had a nice day, and thankful for John for appeasing me and allowing me to play all those other games and give me that one in Edmonton off. And we put a couple of more loonies and toonies in people's pockets after Mr. Bowtie did what he was supposed to do.
Good thing that John did that. Otherwise, he would have lost the dressing room before the season would have even began.
When you mentioned John, John Paddock is one of the three best coaches I ever played for. He was, I think he was one of those coaches that knew what my strengths were and played me to those. I still haven't seen a perfect hockey player. There are some great players, but everybody has a blemish or two or 10 like myself. But John Paddock was great for me as a person. He helped mold me into the man I am today and helped my hockey career. So I'll always be grateful for him for bringing me back. Because the first time I was his player, and he was the coach, and then he brought me back when he was general manager and allowed me the opportunity to be with the Jets, the original Jets, for my last couple of years in Winnipeg, and I'll always be forever grateful for that opportunity.
Eddie Olczyk is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN Radio 1290. Eddie's book is called Beating the Odds in Hockey and in Life. He's going to be doing a book signing tomorrow at McNally Robinson, 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Eddie, in the book, you talk about how you started your broadcasting career in Pittsburgh, of course, alongside the great Mike Lang. And then obviously that leads into coaching, as you talked about earlier. And you coached two of the greatest players of all time. You obviously coached Mario Lemieux, a really good friend of yours.
Yeah.
That was his last year in the NHL. We wanted to ask you, what was it like to coach Mario Lemieux and Sidney Crosby together? You had one of the greatest players, and back in 2005, 2006, we obviously knew that Sidney Crosby was also going to be one of the greatest.
It was an experience. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I think I became the first coach in any professional sport to actually coach the owner, which is, when you really think about that verbiage, that's pretty special territory. But, it was an opportunity and a half. I think it made me a better hockey person. I would never trade in for that experience in Pittsburgh. In respect, Mario first, having been drafted the same year as him back in 1984, having played with him and then broadcast and then eventually getting the job and, being there to guide and to, uh, you know, to do what I needed to do as far as stand behind the bench and help turn that ship around in Pittsburgh. And I'm proud to say that I was, you know, that I was there from, you know, I was there from day one when we decided to make the change and in going a different direction, and then, you know, winning the lottery and getting Sid like we did. And from the first day he jumped on the ice, guys, you just knew. Powerful skater, super intelligent, wanted to be the best every day. And that was something that I had heard about, but until you actually see it, you just don't get a true appreciation. And you just knew it was going to be a matter of time, because, you know, there was a lot of pressure, obviously, and Mario would come back because he wanted to play with Sid. And but he just, you know, he took the city and obviously the National Hockey League by storm, and he continues to amaze at, you know, now is what he was doing as a young kid. So to be around those guys, both of Mario at the end and obviously Sid at the beginning, I don't take credit in either of their careers, just being around them and communicating with them. To me, I'd like to think I had a positive impact on both of them, whether it was around the rink or off the ice. And like I said, it made me a better hockey guy and a better hockey broadcaster. And, you know, who knows what's on the horizon, but it was something that I learned from. And yeah, sure, I was disappointed how it worked out and how things played out as far as, you know, the financials of the business of the National Hockey League. And certainly Jets fans know about that, but it was a great experience, and I would never trade it in regardless. You know, I mean, I know I got fired there in Christmas of 05, but I would never trade that experience in, because I learned a lot about the game. I learned a lot about people. I learned a lot about myself, and it's, you know, I think it's helped me become the person and broadcaster that I am today.
Eddie, last question for you. Eddie Olczyk is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. His book is called Beating the Odds in Hockey and in Life. He's doing a signing tomorrow afternoon, 1 o'clock, at McNally Robinson Booksellers on Grant Avenue. At the end of the book, as somebody comes to the conclusion of the book, do you want there to be one key takeaway that person gets over, you know, one that to you is the most important part of the book in all of the writing?
Well, it's a great question, and if I get emotional, please bear with me. I think a quick version would be is when I was going through my chemotherapy and my cancer battle, I did not know what was going to be at the end of the 6 months. And when I was going through my battle, there was a time there when the side effects brought me to my knees. It tests your will to live. And there was a time when I wanted to quit the chemo because it just, you know, you just, I had nosebleeds and headaches and neuropathy, and you just go to the bathroom. Like for me, I just had no control of my bowel movements, and I would just go to the bathroom. And I'm like, how in the hell am I going to get through today, let alone get through 10 more treatments? How am I going to get through 5 more months? And my wife, Diana, of 32 years, gave me the greatest inspirational speech I ever had. And she just said, look, you got to fight. You got to fight for me. You got to fight for our kids. And you got to fight for all the people that love you. And I needed that because I was down and I was out. And I had never quitted anything in my life ever, whether it was being a player, being a coach, being down 25 bucks at the Downs, all right, maybe 2,500 at the Cineplay at Downs. But I would never quit at anything. And in that moment when my wife told me that, I mean, we cried. I cried for probably 30 minutes. And I said, I was scared and I'm afraid. And I just put my hockey helmet back on and said, look, I'm going to live day to day, because look, in the big picture. And I know when Paul Maurice, a terrific head coach of the Jets, talks about injuries and whatever, and he mentions, you know, hey, this guy's day-to-day, and other coaches in the league and other sports, you know, we're all day-to-day in the big picture, aren't we all? I mean, nothing, tomorrow is not guaranteed for any of us. But for me, getting my hockey helmet back on and going day-to-day and saying, okay, you know what, it's hard, I'm going to be hurt, but I'm just going to go day-to-day. I can't get through the Cliff Notes version of this battle. But what I'm getting to is that I hope that when people read the book or hear my story is that, and I say when I inscribe a lot of the books, is I say, I hope you laugh and love a little bit more after you read the book. And for me, when I was going through my battle, I was very much at peace. Even though I was hurting and I was scared, I was very much at peace. And what I mean by that is that I've always let the most important people in my life know how I felt about them. And my greatest accomplishment has been my family, meeting my wife on a plane, my rookie here in the NHL, and then having our four children. And I was very much at peace because I'd always let them know, and everybody has a story and everybody has a circle, but I've always let them know how much I love them. And my wife would always tell me, because I would always say to her, look, if God forbid if anything would happen to me, you need to tell me that you know how much how important and how much I love you and how important and how fulfilled I am with you in my life. And my wife would always say, nothing's going to happen, nothing's going to happen. Well, life is not fair. Life is too short for all of us. And I was at peace because everybody in my life knew how I felt about them. And that goes from coworkers to friends to people that have made an impact on my life. And I was at peace going through my battle. And if my time was up and the party was over, then at least I knew that everybody in my life that made the most, that were most important to me knew how I felt about them. So I hope that people, let the people closest to them, let them know how you feel about them, because you just never know. And that's what I hope that people will take from my story.
God bless you, Eddie Olczyk. The book is called Beating the Odds in Hockey and in Life. He's doing a book signing, tomorrow afternoon, 1 o'clock at McNally Robinson Booksellers. Eddie, all the best. Thanks so much for this. We appreciate it.
Okay, guys, anytime. Look forward to chatting with you down the road, and we'll talk a little bit more Jets, and look forward to the NHL playoffs right around the corner. I really appreciate you guys having me.
Thank you, Eddie.
Thanks so much, Eddie. Cheers.
When we come back, one final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
That's it for the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Eddie Olczyk for just joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, any of the interviews from earlier in the program, they're all going to be a part of the podcast. That's available wherever you get your podcasts, on tsn1290.ca, and it's, of course, on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Go see Dave Hempstead there later tonight. Tickets available at rumorscomedyclub.com. Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Big props to producer Sean Asor, doing a great job behind the board. For Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.